Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news, behind the news, the story, behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us Mrs. Yurko today, and we're going to be talking about what happens sometimes when you have your child vaccinated and they get an encephalitis, because her story is one of the most touching ones. Well, Mrs. Yurko, thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, Dr. Stan. Glad to be with you today.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners the incredible story about what happened to your husband who was looking after your child, and your child, you know the story, and we'll begin the story here, and then we'll have to be bringing some of our other stations on board. In fact, maybe the best thing to do would be right now to sort of hold off on the story until we get all of the stations online. Let me just give you a little of the background. And then we'll let Mrs. Yurko tell the story. But her husband was looking after their child, who had been vaccinated and was quite ill when he was vaccinated, and developed an encephalitis and died. And of course, the husband was then accused of shaking the baby, this so-called shaken baby syndrome. And the husband said, "I didn't do anything wrong." Well, they offered him all sorts of deals if he'd only plead guilty to a crime he hadn't committed. And when he refused to admit that he had done something he hadn't done, why, they sent him to prison. And how many years was he sent to prison for?
It's been 6 years now, but they sent him to prison for life without ever the possibility of parole.
Life without parole. And, of course, this was a vaccine reaction. This is the incredible thing, and they can't admit that vaccines will do this sort of thing. What about that case with the British nanny? Had that child been vaccinated? Remember the shaken baby case with the British nanny?
Oh, Dr. Stan, you know, so many cases go by, and after a while they tend to run together. I can't recall directly if the child had been vaccinated or not.
All right, fine. But there have been a number of cases like this where people have been sent to prison, and of course, all the evidence was that this had come on right after a vaccination. Now, there's all sorts of scientific studies to show that the vaccines will produce a sort of a reaction and the hemorrhage in the brain. But you see, the medical establishment can't admit that. They will do anything they can to protect vaccines, even if it means that innocent people go to prison. And what is really so incredible, and those of you who listen to our programs regularly will understand that about 1 in 5 children in America today are going to have mental problems because of the thimerosal that was in the vaccines that were given. And the government knows that. There are studies at the CDC show if you have one group of children who got DPT without thimerosal and the other group that did, 20 times the increase, not 20%, but 20 times the increase in the incidence of autism in the group that got the thimerosal. And they're coming out with studies from the CDC to cover that up, because if the American people ever really knew the danger to our children from taking vaccines, why, they would simply lose total confidence in the medical people. They would lose confidence in the CDC and the NIH and this great experiment they're carrying out here in the United States at the expense of our children would end. But asthma is on the rise, and see, we just can't figure out why it's just on the rise in developed countries. Must be that they have cats in the hose. Diabetes, juvenile diabetes, is on the rise. Allergy is on the rise. And now, of course, autism, up from 1 in every 10,000 to 1 in 150 to 1 in 10 children. And how many other will have permanent damage because of the thimerosal they put in our vaccines and still lie about it? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest today is Mrs. Yurko. Is it Francine Yurko, your first name?
Yes, it is.
Okay, fine. Well, Francine Yurko has the most incredible, heartrending story, and so I'm going to let you start telling the story, and we'll have to let the rest of the people pick this up when they come back after the break. But why don't you tell the story of what happened to your husband?
Well, Dr. Stan, my pregnancy was complicated with many different things, to include Group B streptococcus, positive, and gestational diabetes. I had a lack of amniotic fluid. I had all sorts of things that were going on, chronic E. coli and urinary tract infections, where I was also treated with antibiotics. I was definitely not the glowing pregnant woman that we like to see. I had even only gained a net of 2 pounds my entire pregnancy. At my final visit, doctor visit, where they check out your baby and how well it's doing, they discovered that I virtually had no amniotic fluid left inside, and immediately admitted me for the induction of labor, in which case, when my son was born, he was born gray in color. He was only receiving 32% oxygen. He was small and fragile. I refer to him as looking like E.T. on our birthing tape. That's how bad it was. And even as bad as it was, I'm amazed that the medical professionals trained to be aware of things, during childbirth, weren't even aware of the condition that he was in, with his lungs not being properly developed and having RDS, respiratory distress syndrome. They wound up shipping him off to another hospital several hours later that was more prepared to handle his situation. In which case, at that point, he stayed in neonatal for about a week. He had many problems, too. He was born hypoglycemic, and as well, as I told you, with the RDS. And he was severely jaundiced, in which case the bilirubin was rising even when they were discharging him from the hospital, which that strikes me funny now. Back then, of course, I wasn't aware of half of the things that was wrong with him. Matter of fact, even during the trial, it wasn't until after the trial, when we got our hands on the records and started doing researching, that we actually realized how many things were actually going on with our son that we didn't even know about.
All right, fine. Well, then, how long was it after the this that they started the vaccinations?
Well, our child was seen virtually every single week by the pediatrician or medical health professional for one thing or another.
Hold on. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Francine Yurko. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess this afternoon is Francine Yurko, and she had a very troubled pregnancy, and so a child was born, a son was born with respiratory distress syndrome. He was gray, he was having difficulty ventilating, he had rising bilirubin, and he was being seen on a weekly basis by the pediatrician, and he really was always sort of sickly, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, always.
All right, so then what happened? At what point did they decide they had to vaccinate him to protect him from disease?
Yeah. At his 2 months of age, that is when the routine vaccination schedules begin.
But, of course, this is a sickly child, a very, very sickly child. So why are they so intent upon starting vaccination at that point?
Well, funny that you should mention that, because when after everything was over, when I went back to try to speak to my pediatrician about this, because somehow he managed to slide into the woodwork during all of this to include the trial. He wasn't even around. He wasn't present. I had asked him about the vaccinations. After I started to do some research into these things and realized that the symptoms that my child was having and the injuries that he sustained mirrored that of vaccine reaction. And when I had gone to him and I had started to ask him about the vaccines, he flat out told me that, well, he really doesn't know much about the vaccines. That all he knows is by law that he is supposed to give these things.
And of course, this is the tragedy, is that the doctors really are not free to use their own intelligence. Unless the parents object to the vaccines, they're going to give them to you because it's been mandated by people in the state legislature who are under pressure from the vaccine manufacturers, because there's a lot of money to be made in vaccines. And I hate to sound crass, but as you get into this story, and as I've studied this for many years, this is the common denominator. So pick up the story from there. Anyway, Ava's, your child is sickly, he's 2 months of age. and of course is being seen almost on a weekly basis by the doctor. So they give the vaccine despite the fact the child is sickly, and you should never give them. First of all, you shouldn't be giving vaccines at 2 months of age, or as now they're actually doing, forcing the parents in many instances to have them in the nursery. But 2 months of age, when this one was given 6 years or so ago, and so then what happened?
Well, Dr. Stan, even though he was at his 2 month mark, he was really only 3 weeks past gestational period.
Right.
You know, and when he had gone in, he was still having the breathing issues and the apnea. He was still he had major congestion going on in his face.
And of course, he was born prematurely. They had induced labor, so he was at least a month or 5 or 6 weeks.
He was born 5 weeks premature.
5 weeks premature.
Exactly.
All right. So he's a premature child, but because the law says you have to give him at 2 months, doesn't matter that he's really only 3 weeks old. They're going to give the vaccines because this is the position the doctors put in when you begin to mandate. And so basically, pick up the story from there.
Right. So on that day, now, the pediatrician did explain to me that, well, he may drop off in some eating and sleeping pattern. He may, you know, become warm to the touch, and he may even develop a high-pitched cry. But he's disarmed us to these reactions and passed them off as being, but these are normal, so you don't have to worry about them.
But
they'll
go
away.
But the high-pitched cry, of course, really is a sign of cerebral edema. This is what they
right.
don't tell you. And, of course, many of the children do get cerebral swelling and an immune response to the vaccination. So what happens then?
Well, and on that day, they had actually given him six shots.
Six different shots.
Yes, at one time on top of everything else that he was dealing with. His little body couldn't handle the insult of those six shots on top of everything else.
Okay, so then what happened?
And then even, just as the doctor said, just as the pediatrician said, he began to be warm to the touch, and he dropped off in his eating and sleeping pattern. And by the 10th, 11th day, he even developed that high-pitched cry that we were told to expect. You know, and the night before he had collapsed, we were visiting with my mother, and my mother even made a comment to me, "Francine, it looks like his head is swelling." And I said, "Oh, no, Mom." I said, "He's just getting bigger. He's just growing." Little did I know, Dr. Stan, that his brain was swelling. You know, and if we had talked about it that Friday, that weekend before his collapse, when he developed this high-pitched cry, we talked about it and said, "Okay, if he's not any better by Monday, we're going to take him into the doctor." But, of course, that never happened. That Monday came, and literally, I kissed my family goodbye for the very last time. I went to work. Ellen was home with our son and my daughter, her four-year-old daughter, and they got up to do the normal family ritual of eating together and doing the bathing thing with baby. And in the middle of doing the changing part of it, he started to go into his apnea attack that he would have. He makes this hiccuping sound. His chest becomes concave. And he can't breathe. And he spat up. Well, Ellen went just, you know, around the corner from the bathroom to get the clean linen on the table and came back in, and baby was unresponsive. Meanwhile, he begins CPR of what he can remember, what he knows, and when baby's unresponsive, scoops baby up and with a four-year-old and sped to the hospital to, you know, for life-saving procedures. We were not too far around the corner from the hospital. And there, when we were there, we didn't know anything. These people were crowding around him in a small room. I heard twice the doctor yell out at the staff because they had put a tube down his throat incorrectly and was blowing his belly up with air. And then they were not capable of handling his situation and had to send him again to another hospital, in which case at that point we dropped our girl off at a sitter's and went over to the new hospital, where we were kept in a room, not knowing what was going on, what was happening, or anything of this nature, until finally the attending physician came in and sat us down and basically stated that our son was not going to live. And then from there began the questioning of child abuse. He began to ask, you know, do we know what could have caused, you know, these injuries, who's been around the child.
No, what injuries were they talking about?
The injuries that our child sustained was that he had subdural hemorrhaging, bleeding in the brain. It was alleged that he had retinal hemorrhaging, which is bleeding in the eye.
Well, he certainly could have had that, you know, just from the increased intracranial pressure.
Well, even so, even at autopsy, you know, in the beginning they talked about, the attending physician talks about scattered and diffuse, which is, you know, many and all over retinal hemorrhaging in both eyes. And when it came down to it in the autopsy report, there was one minute hemorrhage to only one eye, and it wasn't even in the area of the retina. I mean, where the pathologist that was looking at the eye said, that didn't even make any difference to me. And the medical examiner himself said he's never seen a shaken baby syndrome case where there was retinal hemorrhaging in only one eye. But when the medical community supposedly sees subdural hemorrhage and retinal hemorrhage, it's automatic shaken baby syndrome, period. And from there, that was the line of questioning. Immediately, Children and Families was called in because we had no answers at that time had happened.
When they did the autopsy, did they find that there were hemorrhages within the brain, or was it all subdural?
It was subdural hemorrhage. They mentioned diffuse axonal injury, yet they couldn't produce anything in court to show this or to verify it. And it's funny that when he was in the hospital, when they first did the scan of his brain, Dr. Stan, it wasn't until more than 7 hours after his admission to the hospital, which incidentally was already after they were overdosing him on a medicine called heparin, which heparin, as you know, is an anticoagulant, and it is never, never, never supposed to be given to a patient with or even a suspected brain bleed because it will cause them to bleed out.
Now, why did they give him heparin? That doesn't make sense.
Well, sure it does when you start to put the puzzle together. Now, mind you, our son also had an anticoagulation problem. His blood wasn't coagulating to begin with, so then he gives him this heparin on top of it? Well, immediately, there was no life saving procedures done, Dr. Stan, on our son. There was no alternative diagnosis done on our son. It was automatic suspected abuse. Your child's not going to live. And let's talk about organ harvesting.
Organ harvesting. So they were very interested in harvesting organs on your son.
Oh, sure. My son was worth more to them dead than alive.
All right, so why giving heparin to a child where there's even a question of a head injury doesn't quite make sense.
Well, and overdosing him on heparin and sodium bicarbonate by more than 9 times the normal amount that you would give if it was even allowable to give such a medication.
All right, so then what happens? Of course, does your son die? Do you agree to the organ donation or what?
Well, I did. They talked to me, and I thought, okay, well, if my son's not going to live, what better gift can I give than to save the lives of 3 other babies? This was during Thanksgiving, and in which case, at that point in time, the authorities had already come and scooped up Alan. Children and Families had already come and taken away my 4-year-old. In which she was in foster care for 3 weeks until she was sexually abused by another little boy in their foster care home that, of course, they swept under the carpet. And when I discovered that and it was brought to their attention, my daughter then was immediately returned to me at that point. I was left there for that week watching my son die. And at first when they were talking organ harvesting, they said, take your time, because I wasn't ready to let him go yet. And I said I wanted to spend some time with him before they took him away, finally. And in which case, I signed the papers, and they said, sure, take your time.
Well, now didn't they actually try to talk you into testifying against your husband, incriminating him in child abuse?
Well, sure. Now, like I said, they got my signature on the paper for organ donating, told me to take my time, but yet the very next morning, I was called by a nurse, not even the doctor. And the nurse said to me, quote unquote, the doctor wants you to hurry up and get down here because he wants to get this over with before noon. These people were stoic. They had no feelings, no compassion, and they treated me just as well. Even they're looking at Alan as being the perpetrator. They treated me as a monster as well.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment or two with more of this incredible story. complications of vaccine injections, the encephalitis.
Society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who are actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. Recently, a medical journal reported on the world's first proven remedy for the common cold, allicin, the active ingredient in garlic. During winter months, a pure allicin garlic extract reduced the risk of the common cold by 50%. This was demonstrated in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, science's highest measure of effectiveness. Where do you get pure allicin? You won't find it in store-bought garlic pills, but you'll find it in Alamax. Alamax provides the equivalent of 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Where do you get Alamax? Dial this number now, 866-405-4000. Learn more about Alamax at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention a couple of things we carry. One of them is the Big Berkey water filters, and you can get the Big Berkey, which is made of stainless steel. For a couple of gallons in the top, it comes out the bottom. It goes through ceramic filters packed with activated carbon. Does a great job of taking out pesticides and herbicides and bacteria and bad taste. And this has been standard with missionaries for 150 years. And the Big Berkey certainly is a workhorse. You can clean the filters over and over again. The Big Berkey is $239.95, and of course $10 shipping. If you buy it through us, you get a 4-tape set and a video that we have produced, and they're available in every state in the union except California and Iowa. If you want to get something that can be used in the West Coast here, you get something called a Berkey Light. It's the same size. It's made of Lexan, so you can see the water level. That's what we actually have. We like it very much. And then, of course, you have the two Black Berkey filters. The Black Berkey filters are really water purifiers. They do a much better job of cleaning the water up so that absolutely no bacteria get through and hardly any of the other herbicides or pesticides. But they have to be replaced. The filters have to be replaced every 2 to 4 years. Now, Berkey Light is $199.95. The Big Berkey is $239.95. They both work very well. You can see them, pictures of them, on our website at radioliberty.com. And that's radioliberty.com. And, of course, you get the free video or 4-tape set that we produce, whichever one you get. But we hope that you'll give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and consider getting one of these. You can filter lake water and river water and pond water. A lot of people use these for their children. Instead of having to put out a couple of dollars for a plastic bottle of water, why, here's a wonderful water source. And, of course, you can fill up the bottles over and over again with water that is certainly is safe and very potable and tastes excellent. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest this afternoon is Francine Yurko, and she's telling the story. So didn't they actually, of course, do everything they could to get you to admit that your husband was a brute and had abused your child?
Sure. The very next morning when I was called down to hurry up and get this over with so they could begin organ harvesting on him, I was there being able to hold my son for the very last few hours of his life, in which case the investigators were right outside the window waiting for me until I had asked the nurse to please let me have my privacy, in which case they disappeared. And as soon as I was done letting go of my son, I was led by the arm by a nurse into a small room where these two investigators were waiting for me. Now, mind you, I had my mother and my sister there with me at the time, and these investigators had wanted to talk to me. And I told them, well, if it's something to do with, you know, the case, then I want to have my attorney present. They denied me counsel. I said, well, I would at least like to have my mother or my sister present with me during this conversation. They denied me that as well and told me if I did not sit down and cooperate with them right then and there, that they would get on the phone with the judge and make sure that I never saw my daughter again.
So this is our police at work, our happy police looking for truth, trying to frighten a distraught mother. And that action is just totally uncalled for.
I just lost my son. I just let him go. So at any rate, I sat down with them, obviously. And they began talking with me, and they had this elaborate plan already made out that they were going to make special arrangements for me to call into the jail facility. And anybody that knows anyone in jail knows that you cannot call in. They can only call out and collect. So they were going to make these special plans for me to be able to call in. And what they wanted me to do is they wanted me to tell my husband that I thought that he could do something like this. And let's see what he says. They didn't care about anything of that. What they wanted is to get on tape me making that statement to my husband so they could try to use it against him and I in court later. These people didn't care about justice. The doctors that were on the case, they didn't care about justice and finding the truth. Do you realize that they had all the records at their fingertips, all the medical history on our child, everything of this nature, and no one ever bothered to look at any of it?
Now, what did they offer your husband if he would just plead guilty?
Oh, the prosecutor at that time was even coming to me and trying to get me to convince my husband to plea out.
And what would they have given him at that time?
Offhand, I don't recall what they would have given him, but regardless, it doesn't matter, because my husband was going to refuse to plea out to something that he didn't do, even knowing the fact that if he was found convicted, it would be a life sentence without parole.
Now, apparently the prosecutor was running for office or wanted to get some notoriety on this case. This a really a blown-up case for public publicity purposes?
No, actually, it was more on the opposite end. She had just recently been demoted from her position for withholding evidence in another unrelated case where DNA, it was a matter of there was some rapes going on in the Orlando area of tourists, and they arrested this man. And come to find out, all of these women had a sexually transmitted disease that their alleged perpetrator that they were going to try and prosecute did not have. And she knew this and was withholding it and was going to prosecute him anyway. So she had been demoted, and this was one of her last big cases that she had before her reign had ended at that point. So this was something very big for her that she wanted. And mind you, this woman didn't care about justice. In the year and a half before it even went to court, never once, because I was considered the victim, never once did she contact me in a year and a half to discuss anything about the case, about me, my husband, our child, nothing, until Sunday night at 8 o'clock, the night before trial. She called me to get basic information, my name, where I worked, that sort of thing, so she could go in the court and know something about me. But yet, justice was being investigated, wasn't it?
All right. Well, now, sir, by this time, you knew something about the encephalitis that children get after the vaccination. Did you have a professional witness to come in and testify about the vaccine encephalitis, which does occur, that can mimic shaken baby syndrome?
No, we had no idea about the vaccines at that point in time. We had, Dr. Stant, we had one doctor. See, we had public defenders, okay?
I see. So you already had no means of defending yourself. You didn't have the money. You didn't have the ability to investigate.
Correct.
And you were more or less at the mercy of the government, which had all sorts of money, and they wanted to get your husband.
Unlimited funding, prosecution has.
All right. And what about your public defender? What did he do?
The public defenders, they had never done a case like this before. They had no medical background. They, knowing especially what we know now, we didn't know half of what we know now in court at that time. We didn't know about the vaccines. We didn't know half of the problems that were going on with our son. There was many screw-ups that were done by these defenders not preserving the record.
Hang on to that thought.
Thank you.
another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me mention that the Institute of the Constitution offers you the opportunity to set up a class to teach others about the foundation of our form of government. America was known throughout the world as a Christian nation until 50 years ago. Everybody knew that our laws were based upon Christianity, that we looked upon our freedom coming from the Creator, and the Creator was God, that the very reason that we'd had the Revolutionary War was to pursue this cause of nature's God and nature's law, and the Constitution closed with a sentence of signed this day of our Lord. Everybody knew America was a Christian nation, but you see, that's all been changed because there are people who hate Christianity. Christianity is under attack, and to be able to defend the facts behind the formation of America, you need an education. The Institute of the Constitution will give you that material. It's 12 half-hour lectures by Dr. John Eismo, a professor of constitutional law at Faulkner University. And there are a couple of talks by David Barton. There's a book there that gives you the questions asked, the answers to the questions. You need to set one of these up in your church, in your neighborhood, in your home. First of all, you'll learn, and secondly, you need to teach others. These are being set up all across America today. The Institute of the Constitution, the information is available by calling 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. Or you can go to their website at IOTC Online. That's IOTC Online for Institute on the Constitution. IOTCOnline.com and get the information. Find out about how to set up one of these programs and then do it. How can we possibly preserve our heritage if we don't know what it is? How will we know where we're going where we don't know where we came from? Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Francine Yurko. And so Alan is put on trial, and they've got this all locked shut. The prosecutor's going to convict your husband and send him to prison for killing the child, and he gets a life sentence without possibility of parole?
Correct.
All right, fine. And then once he's taken off to prison protesting that he's innocent, then, of course, you begin doing research, or he begins doing research, and you find out that there have been a number of cases just exactly like this related to vaccines and vaccination.
Oh, correct. Since the end of the trial, we have started what was called the Yurko Project, where we would start networking and researching and speaking with doctors and having case studies done and put up a website. We have a website.
Well, let's get that website right now.
Certainly. That's freeyurko.bizland.com. So that's freeyurko, F-R-E-E-Y-U-R-K-O dot bizland, B like boy, I, Z like zebra, L-A-N-D.com.
All right, fine.
And we put this up, and we started to receive phone calls and emails galore from families and caregivers all over the world that were in the same or similar straits. And upon doing case review and looking into these cases and the records, it's amazing. The majority of these cases that we come across, the children actually collapse right after, within a short period of time, from their vaccines. It seems to be the same, mimics the same right across the board with these cases that come through.
All right, fine. And so this is not uncommon. And then there have been physicians who have actually studied this. And have they looked at the autopsy records or at the slides that were taken, you know, there that made when they did the autopsy?
Oh, sure. Now, mind you, when we were in court, we were outgunned and outnumbered. You know, they had five physicians with two for repeat performances against our one doctor. And it's amazing. Now, I was able to sit there in court for all 3 days, and I noticed some discrepancies. But it wasn't as many discrepancies as I found after the case when I got a hold of the records. Do you know that none of the experts that testified against Alan could agree on the same evidence or even the evidence that was seen?
And, of course, you had public defenders who didn't know what they were doing, and so you really didn't stand a chance at all.
Oh, correct. I dissected this. I was amazed. One says that there was retinal hemorrhaging, another one says there wasn't. One says it's in one eye, another one says it's in both eyes. One says that there's bleeding over here, another one says there's bleeding over here. When in fact, even the expert on our side said the bleeding occurred within the hospital, which goes along with the overdosing of the heparin that we have recently discovered, causing our child to massively bleed out and ending his life for organ harvesting. Now, and as far as the autopsy report, it's completely bogus. Since after the trial, we've gone through the autopsy report, and we have realized there's somewhere around 25 different discrepancies in this autopsy report. To such the extent, it's blatant gross incompetence. One example, the medical examiner talks in great detail about the heart of our son. Well, Dr. Stan, there was no heart there for the medical examiner to examine because it was donated prior.
So they'd already taken the heart out.
Correct. And in another instance...
Well, now, that sounds to me like a gross fraud, and that would be subject to criminal charges.
Correct. And on top of it, we have queried TransLife, the organ harvesting team, the center, in reference to our son's heart, for any notes or any kind of tissues or histology or anything like this on our son's heart, in which case they have replied stating... There is nothing done on your son's heart. There's nothing done before, during, or after. So.
Well, the thing is, I can't understand why they would want to place your child on heparin, unless, of course, this was in anticipation of trying to prevent clotting so that the organs would be more viable. Is that a possibility?
Well, you know, that's one of the functions of heparin, isn't it? Heparin is also used in preserving organs. For harvesting. So you put two and two together, it doesn't take rocket science, Dr. Stan, to know what was going on there. And they figure, oh, well, this is a shaken baby case, here we go.
No, but why would you, with a shaken baby case, why would you give the heparin? Or is there any precedent for this as you've analyzed what's going on across America? And you obviously talked to other people in the same position. Have others been given heparin to ensure that the organs would be viable?
Now, as far as that goes, that I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because Alan and I have taken off in two different directions with the project. He handles all the medical and the legal. I handle the home front where I'm able to advise. Cases that come in based on my experience, things that they can do and shouldn't do, and things of this nature. I'm their sounding board. I can give them referrals, and I handle the financial and the other administrations of the project.
Now, tell me, how many cases out there are there like this? I mean, we're dealing with dozens or hundreds?
No, we're talking in just the United States alone, darn near 1,000 that I'm aware of.
About 1,000 cases. Now, have other husbands or wives been sent to prison on trumped-up charges?
Most definitely. Most definitely. And you know, I'm actually amazed. I'm just so amazed how people have gone to prison with even less evidence, you know, than was even presented in our trial. And children being taken out of their homes, I mean completely, and adopted, fostered out. Or even where the charges were eventually dropped or the case was won and their children are still gone. It's amazing the amount of authority. It's like Gestapo that the authorities and children and families have over you.
Well,
it's unbelievable. And it never really hits home until it hits home. But we were just like anyone else. And it can happen to anyone at any given time. This does not discriminate from any one person. There are doctors, there are dentists, there are lawyers, there are other people in high positions as well, not just common folk like us, that are going through the same thing.
And, of course, do they have any sort of a standard defense relating this to the vaccines? Because, of course, the medical establishment will do anything to defend the vaccines. They've concealed the fact that the original polio vaccine had a cancer-producing virus in it. How can they tell the people the truth? They're concealing the fact that the mercury-containing vaccines, the ones that contain thimerosal, they gave to our children for 20 years, was directly related to the incidence of autism. And they come up with phony baloney studies, anything to keep the people from learning the truth. And, of course, Dr. Mark Geyer, who has done the research on this, says about one child in five in America has a mental defect because of the thimerosal that was given to them in the vaccines. The government knows it. The CDC knows it. The National Institute of Health knows it. But how can you tell the public the truth? So, and the same thing holds with what you're talking about. And this is an acute encephalitis, isn't it, related? Is it an allergic response, or how does the vaccine create this encephalitis?
Well, I mean, there's many different ways. You see, children that, first of all, are already compromised, they are an easier target. You find young children and the elderly are more easy of a target because their immune systems are already either not properly developed, as for the children, or weakened, you know, as being older. Okay, so it creates a very good environment for the encephalitis to occur, for the reactions to occur. However, it can happen just as easily in a healthy child as well. It's like a game of Russian roulette.
Well, is it like an allergic reaction? We know that many of the children who got the original pertussis vaccine would develop the high-pitched cry and develop the encephalitis, and they use that vaccine that they knew produces for 20 years. Now they eventually, after they used up all the toxic one, now they're using the one that came from Japan or similar to that, an acellular vaccine that is not having at least anywhere near as many terrible reactions. But they had put the thimerosal in, so you got the reaction to the acellular vaccine, pardon me, to the cellular vaccine, and then you get the double reaction to the thimerosal. You know, we hear all this, we certainly shouldn't have mothers, pregnant women, eating a tuna fish because there's mercury in it. And yet you'll give 1,000 times the accepted dose to a child in the nursery, and they've been doing this for years, and now they say, well, now we've taken the thimerosal out, there's nothing to worry about. We've taken most of the thimerosal out, there's a little trace we can't. But, of course, it's still in the influenza vaccine. We want every small child to have an influenza shot because, of course, we want to protect their lives.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's not even just the thimerosal itself that is causing problems. And, see, people don't realize how vaccines actually work when they're injected versus natural immunity.
Right.
It completely bypasses the natural process in the body. And that's where you find even people that are getting these vaccines, especially with the flu coming out, with these flu vaccines, how many people are getting sick from it. It can actually create the disease in your body, or if you're talking flu, the flu in your body from getting the shots, because it bypasses the natural body's immune system.
Right.
You know, and so people don't understand that. People also don't understand that besides the thimerosal that are in these things, there's formaldehyde. That's embalming fluid. There's acetone. That's in nail polish remover. Okay, there's aborted fetal tissue. There is, my brain is just racing right now with all the ingredients, these toxic ingredients that we are pumping into our kids. And way back when I was going to school, I maybe got 5 shots, okay? Nowadays, we wonder what's happening with our children. Well, it seems to be the one and only thing that seems to be increasing and changing with our kids today is the fact that now, before a child even goes into kindergarten, they have something like 32 shots given to them.
I know, and of course we see the skyrocketing rates of juvenile diabetes, type 1 diabetes, skyrocketing rates of asthma, skyrocketing rates of allergy, skyrocketing rates of autism, skyrocketing rates of mental problems, and certainly of attention deficit disorder, these other things. And see, we just can't figure out why this would only occur in highly industrialized societies where we give all the children all these vaccines. Well, now, what's the current status at the present time? You are taking the case back to court. You've filed your appeals, and it appears that the prosecution there in your community really isn't very interested in taking this back to court. They're really not even putting their best people on to try to prevent this case from being reheard?
No, they're not. We've been in appeal status now for a year. We filed last year, and the beginning of this year, a year's toll, we finally got it back into the system for a judge to look at it, in which case we've gone back and forth already with our written arguments, and now it just rests in his hands for him to make a decision on whether or not he's going to have an evidentiary hearing and then what will transpire from that point. Mm-hmm. Now, based just on the fact alone from the bogus autopsy report, which I didn't even get into all of the issues that were with the autopsy report, where they state that my son was black when Alan and our son was white. They state two different head circumferences of our son. When he was born with something like 32 and a half centimeters. In the hospital itself, when he collapsed, there's records that state his head circumference to be 37 point something. But yet, in the autopsy report, the medical examiner says our son's head was only 22 centimeters. So he's obviously cross-contaminated our son's autopsy with another or other cases, which is not from beyond that office, as several years back they had a huge investigation because of cross-contamination, lost evidence. It was a whole big thing that was in the paper, an investigation that had come out.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that they did the extensive description of the heart, which had been removed, certainly for organ transplant, would tend to discredit anything in that autopsy report.
So at this point in time, we're waiting on the judge. We are now fundraising, trying to garner funds for the case. We expect the cost to be, we've figured them out to be somewhere around the nature of $55,000 just for the evidentiary hearing, in which case I'm thinking we should hear something hopefully the beginning of this year and possibly even be back into court by, even February of this year. Okay. And if we don't raise the funds to be able to meet this $55,000 that we're going to need for evidentiary hearing, all the last 6 years of our hard work, blood, sweat, tears, is going to be for naught.
All right, how can people contribute if they're interested in helping you and your husband?
Well, online there is an option where people can donate to the fund. We have a Free Alan Yurko Fund on the website.
Free Alan Yurko.
It's on the website itself where they can go and donate via the website.
All right, now give that website just once more.
Certainly. That's FreeYurko, FreeYurko .bizland, BIZLAND .com. Or they're also welcome to, I have been accepting funds, Care of the Yurko Project, Francine Yurko, Care of the Yurko Project, at P.O. Box 585-965, Orlando, Florida, 32858-5965. May I repeat that? It's P.O. Box 585-965, Orlando, Florida, 32858-5965. Dr. Stan, can I give out my home number and my email address as
sure,
well?
Sure, you can. You go right ahead, Francie.
Very good. My home number, which is fax and telephone, is 407-291-4344. My email address, fransworld@aol.com. Now, that's FRANSWRLD. There's no O in world. fransworld@aol.com. And Alan even recently has an email address. It's Alan Yurko, A-L-A-N-Y-U-R-K-O, @aol.com. And your listeners are welcome to call me for inspiration. If they have anyone that they may know that may be in the same or similar straits, this is what we do. We help others. It's no longer about one man and one case of injustice. It's for many, the many, many people out there that don't know where to go, don't know where to start, are not educated, and we're there to help.
Well, I appreciate everything you and Alan are doing. And Alan, of course, could have appealed earlier, but he really wanted to get all of the material together. I know that he held back from the appeal. But now, of course, they're going to need the funds. And if you're out there and you can help them, I've checked this story out. We've talked to Francine in the past. And is Alan doing any programs from the prison there?
Yeah, recently, Alan and I have done a documentary with Dr. Gary Null.
Well, we know Dr. Null. He does a good job.
And Alan has been interviewed by the papers, and it's more to come. We're going to get the public awareness out there, Dr. Stan.
God bless you for everything you're doing. Give my best to Alan, and we'll be talking to you later. Thank you so very much.
Take care.
And, of course, our guest has been Francine Yurko. Could this happen in America? Yes, it could happen in America, where the government has all the money in the world to throw at people. That's why almost 1% of the American population is in prison today. And a lot of those people never committed a serious crime. We need to get a court system that will have justice rather than simply wanting to win at any cost.
Our four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to mention we carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and of course we can't make any medical claims for them. We will tell you that many of the people who use those products do make claims, and they tell us how it's helped their acne and how it's helped their rash and how the neutralizers help their lower and upper abdominal tracts. And we hear all sorts of wonderful stories. The one thing we can tell you about the Miracle 2 soap products is they're great soap and products, and I use the moisturizing soap on a regular basis because it really does take a lot of the scaliness out of your skin. And of course my wife uses the products. She uses the soap not only to wash the various products in, she also uses it to clean off the counter because for some reason or other the ants don't like it. Some people say that they use it on their flowers and their plants. And all we can do is tell you, give it a try. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask, that's 1-800-544-8927. Ask for Miracle 2 soap products. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will seriously consider getting a Phenopoly set. Phenopoly is a board game that is played like Monopoly. And it's actually 5 board games and 2 bonus games, but it's designed to teach you how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. A great program. Most of these programs are $300-$600. This is $139.95 plus shipping. And we've had such wonderful reports from people who've used the product, and children have learned in about 16 hours how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically, and undone all the harm that has been intentionally done in the government schools, which are deliberately dumbing down the American children. So if you'd like to know more about Phenopoly or order one, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're listening to us, we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and we'd love to have you as part of the Radio Liberty family. If you'd like to get a copy of our December newsletter, which will be available, we hope, in another week or so, week to 10 days, this goes into the background of why the Supreme Court removed God and prayer from our schools. Everybody knows they've removed it, but why did they remove God and prayer from our schools? Well, I think you'll be fascinated by this discussion. And, of course, this is the December newsletter. We'll be glad to send you one free of charge. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will decide you're going to go up to our webpage at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can actually listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get much of anything accomplished. I had a lady call the other day, and she says, I listen 5 hours a day. I get a lot accomplished. And she probably has one of these little headsets that you can run around the house. You don't have to sit by the computer. You can get those at Radio Shack. But they give you that ability to go any place in the house you want to and hear the programs. And of course, some of them are repetitive, but we try to make each one just a little bit different. But you can listen to our archive programs. You can listen to the programs we do on this network, Genesis Network, and several other networks. And it's all up there on our website at radioliberty.com. And then you can pull down our newsletters, and there's a wealth of information there. You can pull down the things we've written on population control and other essays that are up on the webpage. And we encourage you to tell other people about our webpage. We encourage you to tell other people about our radio programs. Get them listening. They may not realize that there's really a problem. And maybe they're not going to listen to you, but maybe they'll listen to me. All we can do is try. But the greatest thing that you can do for an individual is to let them understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, and perhaps you'll even lead them to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, which is the main reason that we do what we do here, trying to touch one life at a time. But I may touch the life, you may be the person who actually brings them around to making that final decision. We're all in this together. We are the watchmen on the wall that are described in Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33, leading people to the truth. Which brings us, of course, to a discussion of a new video we're carrying. It's called Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, and the basic underlying theme is, we are to be the watchmen. God has told us to warn others what lies ahead. We are in World War III, whether you know it or not. We are headed towards financial collapse in this country, whether you know it or want to admit it or not. And I believe that if America doesn't return to God, why, we are going to see a terrible vengeance upon this country, because there's no incidents in all history where a nation has repudiated God, where God has not brought his vengeance on that nation. We never talk about God's vengeance at all. But if God is only love, and there's no punishment for sin, that's the ultimate triumph of evil. Why? Because if there's no punishment for evil, why shouldn't we do everything bad that we want to do? And this is exactly what is being taught in our schools today. You are the determinant of what's wrong, right and wrong. You make the decision, or as Aleister Crowley said, do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law, and we have a whole society based upon that today. And if we don't get back to God's law, why, America will be lost. Freedom is not the ability to do what you want to do. Freedom is the ability to do what you should do according to God's law. That's where freedom lies. So here we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, because if America does not return to God, do you honestly believe that God will ever bless this country again? And we ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry. We're on the front lines of this battle every day, trying to awaken people. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be with you once again. This is Dr. Stan saying goodbye. May the Lord be with you.